third case of the day, Pickett v. Sheridan Healthcare Center. Mr. Russell.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This case involves several issues in an award of attorney's fees and the application of the Supreme Court's 1990 decision in Venegas v. Mitchell. Venegas v. Mitchell holds that the plaintiff in a Section 1988 case, and by extension to a Title VII case, in the exercise of his or her right to contract with and bargain for competent counsel of their choice, may agree to pay his or her lawyer a contingent fee in addition to the statutory fee shifting from the defendant. Title VII, like Section 1988, has the same prevailing party language as regards attorney's fees as part of the costs. In this case, the plaintiff is suing in her name under Rule 17A1G of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure as the real party in interest because she is the one entitled to the fees as part of her costs. Mather v. Board of Trustees, cited in the briefs, explains this. The plaintiff had won a judgment which was affirmed in this court last year for $65,000 against her employer in a Title VII case for discriminatory discharge after she complained of sexual harassment at work. The case went back to the district court for an award of attorney's fees. I had achieved excellent results within the meaning of Hensley versus Eckerhart by obtaining for her back pay, compensatory damages, punitive damages, and an injunction. I therefore was entitled to a fully compensatory fee. I voluntarily disclosed my contingent fee agreement with the plaintiff and asked for compensation at hourly rates of about $600.
So, Mr. Rossiello, I just have to comment that I saw nothing in Judge Pallmeyer's opinions questioning your right to have a contingent fee agreement. She took into account
that's right, she did,
that.
Right.
So I don't see where there's any conflict with Venegas.
Actually, there is, because Venegas case.
She didn't say that there was anything wrong with your agreement. She just weighed that as a fact that she took into account. She didn't undermine the whole thing. She just took it into account.
That's very true. She did.
Where in the Supreme Court does it say she can't do that?
Well, it doesn't exactly say that, but if you read Venegas, the contingent fee is what the plaintiff owes the lawyer, whether the plaintiff wins or loses the case.
Right, but district courts have discretion in how much they wish to award, how much fee shifting, in a sense.
That's very true.
But
the error here was, there were four errors here. First of all, the $400 that she derived was not based on the record. The defendant provided no evidence of counter affidavits or no evidence of market rates. The district court, without notice or without a hearing, relied on the Laffey matrix, which was never even brought up by the defendant, and the consumer price index. She's supposed to base that on the record, not extra judicial or information. Bankston versus State of Illinois, which was Judge Caney's case, where at least he wrote the opinion, is very similar to this. The defendant had offered no evidence of hourly rates. The only thing in the record was $230 an hour, and the district judge came up with $150 an hour, and that was vacated. Now, this court in Anderson versus A.B. Painting, following Jaffe versus Redmond, says that while the usual standard of review for an attorney's fee award is the highly deferential abuse of discretion standard, where there has been an error of law in the analysis or methodology of computing the fee, the review is de novo. Now, the error here was that there's no question that the judge has the discretion to set the hourly rate.
Right.
But the judge has got to base it on the record. There was nothing in the record saying that my rate is $400. According to the record here, the fee awarded should have been at least $540 an hour and probably $620 an hour. Now, these motions for attorney's fees require a lot of work. if a lawyer is going to present them properly. There's very strict standards here, and I've had these cases up here before. So, I mean, I know how heavy the burden is. I filed a motion that had to be almost 2 inches thick. I had awards in there, court orders, settlements. I was getting $6.20 an hour 2-3 years before this case was even tried. Actually, I got $6.20 an hour for a case I tried like 3 weeks or 4 weeks before this case went to verdict in August of 2008. Now, there was nothing in the record to support the $400. If the judge was going to use the Laffey Matrix, I think it would have been a good idea for her to put it on her website or let us know in advance that she's going to disregard what's in the record and use the Laffey Matrix.
So remind me, after she enters her order, did you move for reconsideration?
No.
Why not? I mean, you would have had a chance to make whatever arguments you wanted about the Laffey Matrix at that time.
The Federal Rules of Civil Procedure really don't provide for rules for motions for reconsideration.
It was the first time she'd made that determination.
Well, Judge, I had asked for a hearing 3 times, and then she said that, okay, I'll allow one if I need one. Well, it turns out she really did need one, but she never asked for a hearing. Now, I've had these cases before, and I've learned from experience, when the district judge conducts a hearing, they get to see the evidence, they get to see the lawyer. I tried this case to verdict. I got excellent results. She remarked that I tried the case with efficiency and dispatch. I probably tried 60, 70 cases to verdict in this court or in the district court over the last 40 years. And there was just nothing in the record to support $400 an hour. I had another thing. It's very difficult for a plaintiff's lawyer like me to get a defense lawyer to give me an affidavit as to what they're billing an hour. Now, fortunately, I have a good rapport with a number of defense firms. So Vedder Price gave me an affidavit. McDermott, Will & Emery gave me an affidavit. And if you really look at the Laffey Matrix, my rate really should have been $100 higher than I was asking for. According to the Laffey Matrix I found online, my rate's closer to $700 an hour. But I didn't ask for that because I didn't want to shock the district judge, quite frankly. So there's four major errors. She says she clearly reduced the hourly rate because I had the contingent fee agreement with the plaintiff. And that is an error of law. The contingent fee agreement was what the plaintiff owed me. It had nothing to do with what the defendant owed the plaintiff. Kirchhoff versus Flynn, Judge Easterbrook's case, Barrow versus Falk, Presley versus Hager, all say that the lawyer is entitled to his market rate, his current market rate, not to what the judge thinks I deserve. And she said in her opinion that blank dollars will amply compensate Mr. Rossiello for his services. I was not entitled to what would amply compensate me, in her estimation. I was entitled to what my current market rate was. The second error was that she first approved attorney's fees for a co-counsel I took into the case, and then she changed her mind after she found out that the fees hadn't been prepaid. I thought that was erroneous. I am, according to the 28J letter I recently filed, there are cases saying that I am unequivocally entitled to attorney's fees for pursuing the entitlement to attorney's fees. The third error, she denied the evidentiary hearing on the factual issues related to the hourly rates. The defendant gave no counter affidavits. I'm going to save the rest of my time. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rossiello. Mr. Weintraub.
May it please the court, Gary Weintraub for the appellee. Mr. Rossiello has raised 3 issues. None of them, in my view, is substantial. First, with respect to his argument that an evidentiary hearing was mandatory, we cited Small versus Richard Wolf Medical Instruments, this court, 2001. It's not often where one finds a case exactly on point before the very same court involving the very same party and the very same issue. Quote, we conclude the district court did not err in declining to conduct an evidentiary hearing on the fee petition. An evidentiary hearing was not mandatory here. An evidentiary hearing was not necessary here, particularly in this case where the number of compensable hours was determinable based on the papers, was
what,
determined.
What about the district court's decision to rely on this Laffey matrix? Why couldn't she have just said, you know, here's the website, you know, this is the one. If there are several versions floating around out there, then that might have focused. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily for an oral hearing, but at least for putting all of the information on the table.
Well, Your Honor, HADNOT collects the cases on this, and apparently a number of the district judges have considered the Laffey matrix.
Does that mean that it's always, I mean, normally you
factor,
put the evidence on the table.
As one factor, and...
But it's not like the United States Code. I mean, it's a document that somebody's put together with some empirical research.
It's a document put together by a government agency, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, D.C., available on a government website.
And I'm going to tell you that we hear all too many immigration cases, and very frequently in the immigration cases, country reports will be submitted. Those are government documents. They're created by the Department of State. They're available online. And yet, they are introduced into the record so that people have a chance, if they might want to find information outside the report, to present a different point of view about an aspect of it. So I'm not sure that it's enough just to say that it's a government document.
No, but I think it's simply one more factor that was taken into account, including everything that Mr. Rossiello submitted in terms of prior awards, in terms of amounts he'd received in settlement, including the affidavits which he submitted, one of which supports strongly Judge Pallmeyer's rate award. It's only $50 off. She awarded him $400. Mr. Schneidig's affidavit awarded him $450. The Laffey matrix, I think, is just one more factor. And I think this may be an opportunity if this court chooses, because apparently a number of the district judges have considered this factor.
Well, the question is, consider it or consider it without notice that it's going to be considered. I don't see anything wrong with considering it, but if somebody might want to say something about this area or about the particularities of a case, I would think that it's a starting point, not an ending point.
Well, but I think Your Honor was right. I think Mr. Rossiello certainly could have gone back and said, Your Honor, we want to have an opportunity to show that it doesn't support. He didn't do that. Fees for pursuing fee petition. Mr. Rossiello mentioned his 28J letter. There's no dispute on the legal principle here. Mr. Rossiello told this court in his October 20th letter, it was error for the district court not to award fees for pursuing the statutory entitlements to fees. We agree there's an entitlement. There's no disentitlement to seeking or being awarded fees on fees. The district court did award Mr. Rossiello fees for pursuing his fee petition. Mr. Rossiello seems to think it's carte blanche. He asked for over $15,000 for fees in pursuing the fee petition. He asked for fees for himself. He asked for fees for outside counsel that he retained. The district judge found duplication. The district court was more than generous with him in this area. Finally, we get down to...
Mr. Weintraub, what was the amount she did award for pursuing fees?
She awarded him 7.16 hours at $400 an hour. Finally, we boil down to the issue of rate. This is the highest hourly rate Mr. Rossiello has ever been awarded in any contested case. He admits that in reply.
But, you know, there's a time factor here, and actually in some cases one gets a little bit of success, other cases one gets more. He actually, as the district court recognized, got a good result for his client in this case. So I'm not sure that we have to, you know, go 10 years back and find what he was getting for cases that had a different profile.
Your Honor, the district judge considered all of that. She adjusted those amounts. She considered the affidavits. Certainly it can't be said that her award here, the rate that she determined, was an abuse of discretion, a very high standard to overturn a district judge's award of fees. Frankly, I would have liked to have
seen
that it's an abuse to award this much. I look at some of these other awards that have been made to Mr. Rossiello. I look at some of these other opinions. I want to say this is an abuse. I think he's looking a gift horse
but
in the mouth.
You didn't cross appeal.
It's hard to say that a district judge has abused her discretion here.
I guess I'd like your response, Ms. Weintraub, to this inquiry by the court. Judge Plummer says she notes that Mr. Rossiello stands to recover almost $30,000 from his client before any statutory fee changes hands. And a little further on, concludes, in light of this agreement, the evidence that Mr. Rossiello cites in support of his very substantial hourly fee is less persuasive. And when one sees the reduction from $600 to $400, gets pretty close to that contingent fee number. What are we to make of her, if anything, her referencing the contingent fee? I mean, why is that a factor in the analysis of the reasonableness of the rate?
Well, I think it's a fact.
Your position is it's too excessive, but. But just is she in error to be reflecting on that private contract with the attorney?
I think she had a duty to reflect on it. First of all, he put it in the record. He made it part of his papers.
Right.
Second of all, I think the Supreme Court in Hensley says that a district judge has a duty to make sure that an award is not so low as to be unfair or so high as to be a windfall, and to consider the contingent fee as one factor, not controlling, one factor, not a cap, which was the issue in Venegas, one factor. And frankly, I'm troubled by the way Mr. Rossiello structures his fee agreement to take three layers of fees, a contingent fee, a flat fee, and a statutory fee. As I said in my papers, makes it difficult, if not impossible, to settle these small value discrimination cases, to turn down a $21,000 settlement offer and then ask a jury for much less in compensatory, is a result of or tied to this kind of a fee structure.
Well, it's a roll of the dice for him. I mean, it worked out here, but, you know,
it
you put $21,000 on the table and you could have walked away with zero.
It did work out here, but it makes, as courts have noted before, it makes settlement very difficult, if not impossible, the way Mr. Rossiello structures his fee arrangements. I'm troubled by that. A $15,000.
That may be a topic for another day in another situation. I'm not sure if somebody wants to stand in their right to go to trial that we have to worry about settlement to that degree. But
if I may just say one more thing, which also is troubling to me, I don't know that I have an obligation or duty to talk about his status, but since this court entered an order on August 31st regarding his status and mandated disclosure if he were subsequently disciplined by the Supreme Court, and since he has now been suspended by the Supreme Court, I don't know if that's been reported to this court.
We're aware of that.
And I recognize there are different bar requirements. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weintraub. Mr. Rossiello.
Very quickly, Judge Wood, district judges really do not like motions to reconsider. They don't they like to see new evidence or something new. So that's one of the reasons I don't do them. Secondly, the district court clearly reduced the hourly rate because of the contingency fee. That's the only reason. She didn't reduce my hourly rate because of limited success or the quality of the representation or anything like that. She solely reduced it because of the contingency fee. This court said in Barrow versus Falk that the starting point in the lodestar fee is to first determine the number of hours. I had no quarrel whatsoever with the number of hours she reduced. I had, and that's not even before this court. The only thing I have a quarrel with was the reduction of the hourly rate. Mr. Schnadig's affidavit at Vedder Price, he says he was billing at that time $540 an hour. That's the lowest hourly rate in the record for someone of my experience. The highest would have been from McDermott, Will & Emery, around $700. And that's all I...
What about the denial of fees for pursuing fees? Your opposing counsel said she did award...
All right, that's a good point. First of all, she was right the first time. The reason I took extra counsel in on this, because I've had this scenario before. I'm behind the eight ball if I go to a hearing. You know, the lawyer who represents himself as a fool for a client? So Vicki Lafer Abramson's firm has represented me before in the Avatia case, and the order is attached. She calls me as a witness, and she handles the whole thing for me, and Judge Norgel, I mean, gave her $15,000, $20,000 about 15 years ago. But Judge Pallmeyer took the $9,600 she first gave the co-counsel away because it hadn't been prepaid in advance. Now, there's no requirement that it be prepaid in advance. We submitted a proposed order. It's in the appendix, supplemental appendix. No, it's in the short appendix to the appellant's brief, showing the distribution. Everybody was going to get paid the same day. The defendant had no objection to everybody getting paid the same day, me getting paid the same day. But Judge Pallmeyer apparently got angry or upset that I hadn't prepaid it, and she just angrily took it away, quite frankly.
But you didn't get it for the additional counsel, but she did award, as I understand it from your opponent,
She awarded me fees for pursuing fees. Right. She reduced it, I think, by 10 hours. I have no problem with that whatsoever. I have no problem with that at all, and that's... Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.